Hello, my name is Philip Miritin, and today we are going to have a conversation beyond science and religion.
Breaking new ground in thinking, exploring the outer limits of what we know about the world and ourselves, unhindered by common beliefs and perceptions. This is Conversations Beyond Science and Religion, taking on subjects from the Big Bang, the multiverse, and evolution to the supernatural and the new rising consciousness. This is where scientists, philosophers, New Agers, and spiritualists come together to discuss where this world may be heading. Now, here's your host, lawyer, philosopher, and the author of The Heaven at the End of Science, Philip Miritin.
Now, the topic of today's show is how to find the genius within. And we've all heard a lot about this topic of geniuses, and we tend to attribute the term to those with a highly refined special skill. We think of Einstein, Newton, Mozart, Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo, Shakespeare, and many others who we call geniuses. But the root of the word is interesting, and it actually serves as a preview for today's conversation. In ancient Rome, it seems, the word genius was a term meant for the guiding spirit or guardian deity of a person. The noun is related to a Latin verb that means to bring into being, create, produce. And because the achievements of many exceptional individuals seem to indicate the presence of a particularly powerful genius or guiding spirit, by the time of Christ, the word began to acquire its second meaning of inspiration, talent. So maybe we all have a guiding spirit, but we don't know about it. But today, one of the definitions of genius is extraordinary natural intellectual power, especially as manifested in an unusual capacity for creative activity of any kind. But once again, we see two things in conflict here. First of all, we tend to think that only certain people can be geniuses. They're born with something. They're born with the genius gene. But then again, we hear others say that everyone has a genius for something. Now, the 17th century poet John Dryden is the one that we could attribute the statement, genius must be born. It can never be taught. So John Dryden seemed to think that geniuses are born. On the other hand, we can contrast that statement with that of Thomas Edison, the inventor of the light bulb, we recall, who famously said, genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. And then in the book Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, the author of the famous book The Tipping Point, he has a lot of discussion in that book about how it takes about 10,000 hours to be really good in something. So which one is right? Is genius something that we're born with, that you either have it or you don't? Or is it something that you acquire over time? Is there a guiding spirit animating all of us that we only have to tap into to find our own special genius? Now, joining me on today's conversation, again from the United Kingdom, is Manjeet Samanta Lawton, who, as I said last week, is a medical GP who followed her own genius groove into becoming an international author and lecturer. In her work, she connects cutting-edge science and spirituality. In her first book, Punk Science, which we discussed last week, that book became an international bestseller and revealed a new vision of the cosmos that places black holes at the creative center of the universe. She has traveled and spoken throughout the UK, the US, Europe, and Japan, and has appeared on multiple TV shows, documentaries, and radio. She's also working on a documentary of her own called Punk Science, based upon her book. Now, her second book, The Genius Groove, tackles the question of the root of genius and how modern interpretations of scientific theories may help us tap that guiding spirit known as genius in all of us. Welcome back to the show, Manjeet.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you again. And once again, we're going to pivot a little bit here, but it's not that big of a pivot because I think we're going to be talking about science, scientific interpretations, and what that tells us about genius. But first of all, what is genius to you? What does that term mean to you?
It's funny, I ask a lot of people that question for various interviews myself for my movie making. think genius is the particular the particular purpose of vibration that each individual is actually destined to play in the grand scheme of things. If we are all parts of the oneness, we all have our unique expression of the one that is relating back to our universe in a particular way. And depending on if that's the right thing for this in particular incarnation, you maybe have I won't get into souls and things like that in the different incarnations, but in particular lifetimes, a soul is meant to or not meant to express that genius for that particular lifetime. So we all have purposes. Every single lifetime, you're doing exactly as you're meant to be. Expressing exactly what you're meant to be doing. And sometimes in a lifetime, you express something that's so unique and outstanding, and that is sort of tapping into your true purpose, your true genius. It's a dynamic between your frequency and vibration in a relationship to the universe where it's both, it's like the breathing black hole. You're sort of, the universe is coming through you. And you are also giving your stamp on this creativity as well. So I really do believe everybody has it. The old science of genius as we knew it, that it was big brains and fixed IQs and genes, we now know that all of that science is breaking down. And if there's people out there going, what do you mean this science is breaking down? Well, go have a look at the real cutting edge of biology and neuroscience. Don't look at the middle people. Go to the top. And what you will see is that we now understand that genes do not make us who we are. You know, it's the brain is a fluid organ. And what is it responding to? Well, it's responding to taking particular information from, you know, the quantum vacuum, whatever you can call it, from the quantum vacuum really is the infinite black holes, by the way, and I can go into that a bit later. But you know, so this is it's this relationship. So everybody has this genius. The old science is out. The new science is in, where everybody has a genius. Everybody is in relationship to the universe in their own particular way. And is it able to express it?
Yeah, and I think that what you're saying is that we sort of have to reinterpret or at least reframe our view of the concept of genius in light of the evolving new paradigm we see on the horizon. And as we know from prior shows and in your book Punk Science and in my book The Heaven at the End of Science, we sort of do this a similar thing where we're trying to change the context we're trying in which we live. And in the old mechanical worldview, the Newtonian worldview, we're sort of like robots running down sliding down slots on a game board, where we're sort of given this fixed set of genes. Of mechanical parts that can never be changed. You sort of have it or you don't. And in this evolving paradigm, we see something different, where we see that our relationship to the cosmos as a whole is changing because we're redefining what the cosmos is, right? We're and so therefore, and now let's talk a little bit to give some foundation here. Let's talk about what the new science is telling us about genius and about the cosmos and about the connection between each of us and the universe at large. In your mind, what is the new science teaching us about that connection?
Okay, well, you can break that question down into the new physics, the new biology, and experimentation, sort of experimental data as well. We've got to back up that this is the new
Yes.
the actual reality that's been there all along, but we haven't actually understood it. So the new physics, as I'm sure people who follow your show understand, is that, you know, from quantum theory, we started to understand that consciousness is actually involved in it somewhere in reality. Most physicists just call it the measurement problem and ignore it, the fact that observation has something to do with the collapse of the wave function. Some physicists have taken this further and said, okay, what is it about observation that's something to do with consciousness? And come to the conclusion that consciousness is fundamental to reality. So consciousness is everywhere. And what the brain therefore does is not originate consciousness, but it's a transmitter for it's a transducer. It actually interprets consciousness. And, you know, depending on how it interprets consciousness, we know this now, is how the brain actually changes over a person's lifetime. A good example, the most famous example, is probably London taxi cab drivers. I mean, don't forget, when I was in medical school, which is in the 90s, we didn't realize that the brain was fluid. We thought that the brain was absolutely set when you were born, and it didn't do much after a certain age. So this is, you know, this is very new. And so we recently have discovered that London taxi drivers who have to take very detailed exams on the map of London actually have changes to their brain. So that's something that was not known about, but it's a really good example about the way that information is taken from the consciousness field is showing up in the brain's physiological changes. It's not that the brain is changing and therefore it's changing consciousness. Consciousness is changing the brain. So we're starting to see this new reality where the brain is a conduit, not the originator. And as you know, top neuroscientists such as Susan Greenfield, you know, will tell you, there is no spot in the brain that we can call consciousness. Much as people would like to think that there's somewhere that, you know, consciousness originates in the brain, that's a Newtonian view where the brain is a machine and the machines have parts. Yeah, so there must be a part that's got consciousness. You know, we've been taking the brain apart and we cannot find anything that gives rise, you know, in the all these neurons. We kind of find what's actually responsible for our inner thoughts. So, you know, the brain in this new physics, the brain is actually a transducer, and that's obviously bringing the physics and biology together. In fact, it's not just limited to the brain. It's actually your whole being. And you know, people like Candace Pert have done great work on how the entire body contains neurotransmitters, and you know, back in the 1970s, she was one of the first people. So you know, everyone knows we talk about gut feelings and all these sorts of things. The brain is a particular transducer because it transmits the message of consciousness into neurological signals, which move the body. You know, it's a particular transducer, but actually the whole being is a transducer. So you're continuously at every level interpreting consciousness from the fundamental consciousness that makes up our universe. So when it comes to our biology, the other side of it is that we're often told, well, genius is in your genes, that's it, you can't change it. And I like the in your introduction that you talked about the you know, the original meaning of genius. It actually goes further than that. It actually goes back to Sumeria, where people talked about the jinn, the sort of the spirit, which people today in those parts of the world still talk about. But it's become, you know, this fixed thing. This that genius is to do with your size of your brain and your genes, you know, and you can't change those. Bloody bro, you know. But then we did the Human Genome Project, and as people like Bruce Lipton have pointed out, that our view of genes, of genetics, is now very different. Where we expected human beings to have over 100,000 genes, we've now realized we've got about 24,000 genes, and they're not different at all from other animals. They're about, 98% the same. We're about 98% the same as a mouse, for example. So the excitement from genetics per se is gone, and everybody's moved into epigenetics, going, well, that must be where the action is. This idea that genes make us who we are, New Scientist, I think it was 2003, made an announcement which said, and bearing in mind, this isn't the new age sector of science or anything like that, this is mainstream, said genes do not make us who we are. We cannot look to our genetic code to define what makes us human. So what does? So now we can't look into our genes and say, okay, everything I need to know about myself is in my genetic code. People still in our culture think this way, but again, you have to look to the top scientists. The top scientists no longer think this way. They no longer think that that's what defines us. So, we've got this new physics, we've got this new biology where, we're no longer see that we're defined by our genes. There's something a lot more nebulous that is in charge of our biology, and Bruce Lipton himself goes on to say that it's perception of the environment which is driving our DNA, which is giving signals to our DNA. Well, perception, what is that? It's consciousness. So again, we're coming down to consciousness in the new biology. And there's also experimentation. One of the things that fascinates me is something called blind sight, where people who have optical tracts and their brains are damaged, and we're supposed to be seeing with our optical tracts, of course. People who have damage in their optic tracts can actually, in experiments where they shouldn't be able to do this, correctly respond to visual stimuli. And they are able to, be beyond the realm of chance, actually identify something that's a visual stimulus. But, all sorts of experiments of this sort are done, and not just in blind sight, where people are not supposed to be getting the information that they are. And what it suggests to me is that there are other ways of tapping into the universe. And this has been done experimentally through these experiments on blind sight and other experiments of this type. We don't just get our information physically. We are getting it directly from the universe itself. And that is what we are tapping into when we tap into our genius. When we get those levels of inspiration, it's because we're going deeply into our own personal, unique relationship between us and our universe. And it's an exchange going on. So that's... we're leaving behind the old physics. We're seeing the old science does not add up. Believe me, there's lots of people out there who would love for us to stay in materialism, and a lot of scientists who, even though they know better, their emotions can't cope with the new science. So they still live their lives like materialism is still rules. But the reality is we've left it behind a long time ago. We're no longer in material science. We have to move into this new science of consciousness where we're in dynamic interaction with our universe.
Yeah, and I think that one of the most important things here is to understand that it's the many of the mainstream scientists, that Majeure's talking about, are doing experiments which are disproving the materialistic model. Okay. And by materialistic model, what we mean is if you simply compare the human figure, the human form, to a car, the materialistic model would say that we are a sophisticated car or a robot where we have these parts. The parts would be called genes. And if you plug in different genes into different people, those genes will determine the conduct, the form, the nature of that person, just like the car parts determine the workings of a car. That's the materialistic model. We know that model is not correct, and a lot of this whole issue to me, which is breaking through to your higher potential, your genius, we can call it all sorts of different things, is really breaking through the barriers, I think, that tell us that we're nothing but machines. And part of the problem, I think, Manjeet, is that we have so many leading scientists, so many textbooks, and mainstream materialistic scientists that are still advocating the Newtonian model, for example, the view that that the mind or consciousness is simply an epiphenomena or some kind of illusory spirit arising from the brain, that for the normal person on the street to question that takes a lot of courage. But fortunately, we have more and more people, more and more books like Punk Science, The Genius Groove, the Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton, The Conscious Universe by Dean Radin. There's so many books out there that are not only puncturing holes, but that are opening up wide chasms in this worldview. And actually, I think it becomes much more exciting. And that's the whole point of this conversation today, is that this is not just New Age mumbo jumbo we're talking about here. We're talking about something that is really finally showing us that as a matter of scientific rigor and logic and reasoning, there is more to our potential than meets the eye, and there's more to our potential than just being a robot off the assembly line.
I think, you have to, I make the analogy with this, that it's like going into a company, which has, workers on the factory floor, then you get the middle management, and then you get, right at the top, you might get the CEO. If you were to go to the workers on the factory floor, they'd tell you one version of what things are about, Then if you go to middle management and say, how about this, implementing this change? They'll go, oh, no, it's totally impossible. And they'll spout the company line as it's always been. If you actually go to the CEO, and you make a suggestion, the CEO might say to you, hey, that's not a bad idea, let's do that. Whereas the middle management are really stuck in the old ideas. This is what's happening at the moment in science. If you're going to the middle management level, they'll say, yes, genes are responsible for all that we are, blah, blah, blah. The whole, line that we've been saying for many for many years now. And but if you go to the scientists at the top, last time we had a little mention of a physicist named Lee Smolin.
Right.
So he's, he's one of the top physicists of our time, really. And, he writes in his books, the universe is not made out of things. It's made out of processes.
Right.
Reality is not stuff. So this is a top scientist who's saying this. This is not somebody who's coming from esoteric. I myself was also at the Royal Institution in London, the famous Royal Institution, and I was at a lecture on consciousness with Professor Susan, Baroness Professor Susan Greenfield, and she actually was giving a lecture on consciousness. And she herself said, look, we just don't know what the consciousness is. It's not as if it's a part of the brain. So she was, at the time, she was the head of the Royal Institution. She's one of the UK's top scientists. And it's important to see that, yes, you will get a lot of middle management of science spouting the company line that's always been. But if you really look at the cutting edge, and that's of the mainstream scientists, you're actually seeing something different. And I agree with you. And all of this comes down to empowerment. When you actually show people, hey, the science that you think, what you think science is saying is not actually true anymore. This is the new science. It gives that inner permission for a person to say, well, maybe genius is not something that is, outside of me that's unattainable. Maybe there's something inside me that needs to come out, and maybe I'm a genius myself. And you know, it's that permission giving. So I'm in my book, I'm using science to help empower people to understand that, hey, you know, it's not that this fixed thing anymore. You know, you can actually access that. So where people, you know, I've met people doing my talks who failed an exam when they were 11 years old. Maybe this was years and years ago, 40 years ago. And they still have this fixed idea that they are stupid because they failed this one exam. And I think society does tell us that your value, your intelligence is measured by something outside of you. Some exam, some school teachers, you know, there's always something outside. You give your power away. And so people's beliefs have been formed by all sorts of things. And they think, well, I'm just, you know, I failed this exam 40 years ago. I can't have a very high IQ. This is how I am. This is how I was born. When you show them that science doesn't exist anymore, it helps them to think again. So I think this is why the science is so empowering.
Yeah, I really think your example of the CEO and middle management is a great example, because it really is something everybody is familiar with. You know, the middle management folks are basically told not to rock the boat, or that's their motif. And not that there's anything wrong with being middle management, because most people are in middle management. But the point is that it's sort of like fighting City Hall. In this country, we have that saying, you know, you can't fight City Hall, or you can't fight the system. But when you go to the top, as Benjir is saying, the people at the top, the deep thinkers, the founders of these theories, the originators, have doubts, and they're starting to go outside of the orthodox mainstream Newtonian worldview. And to me, one of the most important things here is terminology, is the discourse, because so much of this is filled with sort of new age kind of talk that really increases doubt. It raises eyebrows over for some of the leading thinkers, the media. For example, the law of attraction is an example, and I know that you talked about this in your book, The Genius Groove. You know, the law of attraction has some appeal to it. Not only is it the source of millions of books that have been sold, from The Secret to all sorts of other books with the same kind of idea, but for those who are in the scientific community, the law of attraction just sounds really weird. It sounds like New Age, as I said, mumbo jumbo. But we need to put this, so we need to put this discourse, this conversation, into a more scientific or rigorous framework, and that's why I do think that quantum theory, as you've said, and as we discussed, is sort of the hook to me. It's the hook. I don't think it's the only hook, but as we know, one thing that really amazes me is that we know through quantum theory that things are not as they seem. That as Heisenberg said, atoms are not things. Virtually everybody you talk to, or every book you read on the topic of quantum theory, is basically saying the same thing. That all we really know that's out there is a wave equation. That there's nothing out there until there's an observer, until there's a consciousness on the scene. Well, if that's true, then why are we letting things called genes determine who we are? There's a contradiction. See, I think, and it hasn't permeated our mindset here. But how can you hold to the view that quantum theory is true, i.e., that consciousness is integral to reality, and believe that something outside of you called genes, which are things, determine who you are? You know, so to me, this paradigm is showing that there is indeed a connection, and I think, in my own view, a connection between who we are and the world at large. And the other point I would make here, while I'm going on this mini rant, is that the great thinkers, the ones who came up with the profound insights into reality, these guys didn't think like robots. Einstein is so famous for just being so original. I mean, the guy was a patent writer and came up with his most insightful ideas while he was reviewing patents. Because he wasn't part of the mainstream, and he was outside with a no-holds-barred, unlimited mindset. He wasn't constrained by the mainstream orthodox worldview. And so again, it's another contradiction, which is that the leading scientists aren't limited. They I think, with their insights, with their epiphanies, with their eureka moments, they dip into, to me, a united consciousness when they come up with these theories. So that's my little thing. I want to ask you, because I know that I think you're a good example of somebody who found their own genius. I mean, in your book, The Genius Group, there's some personal parts to that book, but you had to break through your own barriers, right? I mean, you had to change your perspective to yourself to become the person you are now, which is the author of an internationally known new science book called Punk Science, right?
Yeah, I had to go through my own journey, and you know, suddenly people started to call me a genius, and I just found this very amusing because you know, I went through all my training to be a GP. So I had to do various different specialties, and every single specialty I would follow this particular doctor, and you know, they would always talk about her in wistful tones, saying, oh, she was one of the best pediatric doctors we've ever had. And they would turn to me and go, you'd never make a pediatrician. And it was like, you know, I kind of went through a lot of my life. I mean, obviously I did, you know, fairly well because I got into med school in the first place, but I'm feeling kind of average, and there was not a lot sort of expected from me. And you know, although there was, you know, certain times where I had to, you know, do very well in exams in order to get there, it was quite hard work. It wasn't easy for me. I had to really study a lot to, you know, rote learn everything for medical school. And when I got to med school, I was very disinterested, and I ended up actually failing exams in med school. I mean, a lot of people fail, you know, from time to time, but you know, it was not something that I found interesting, to be quite honest. And you know, the first few years were just, I felt very distant from it. It was, you know, felt very soulless to me. And I was also, as I said last time, going through all this these changes with the Kundalini, and I really didn't know what was my thing. So you know, when I went through these massive changes, which are totally entwined with my personal life as well, I you know, to find myself suddenly being called genius was like highly amusing, really, considering what I'd been through. And people started to get intimidated by me. There's one person who is she's head of quite a, you know, prestigious organization in this country. She took a year before she could picked up the courage to actually pick up the phone to speak to me. Because, you know, so I thought, you know what, I just have to say how I got through what I got through, what I've learned about, because, you know, when I was writing Punk Science for 4 years by myself without a publisher, I had no idea if anybody was going to read it.
Yeah.
I had no clue. And I just was so nervous when I showed, you know, my first chapter to someone, thinking they're going to find it appalling. And you know, so just to have the, you know, people from around the world and the impact that it's had, and people writing to me and telling me how inspired they are, it's just so incredible. But I didn't set out for that at all. I set out to write a book for me, really. And to write a book that you know, scratching an itch that I needed to do, which was, you know, there wasn't anything out there that I could see on this subject that was easy enough to read, that was contemporary, that included, you know, some popular culture in it, and you know, that placed this in a really easy to understand format. And that is actually the biggest feedback that I get, people writing to me saying, at last I understand this subject.
I think one of the best qualities of punk science and the Genius Groove and really what you're about, what impresses me is that you took a step outside of sort of the determined path or the standard path through life. I mean, you had a job as a doctor, this bioenergy practice. You seem to be with a good job. You were married. Everything was fine. But it wasn't right for you. And so there was something about your evolution that made you really follow your heart, which is sort of a classic way to put it. You know, you followed your heart, and you wound up taking a very original view of some of the scientific theories, which led to punk science. Now that's the way I'm viewing it. I could be wrong, but that's the way I'm reading. You know, I'm reading this, and I think that that's something that is a lesson for everybody, right? Because I was going to ask you, the next question is going to be, well, what lesson would you have for others? Okay, because it's not as if the two of us are. I mean, we weren't born as somebody said. I'm sure I was not born with a genius gene. I'm positive I wasn't. I mean, and I'm not saying I'm one now, but the point is that I think Thomas Edison was partly right, but you've got to, which is that work is a large part of this. Mm-hmm. But the other part of it is not letting people tell you that you can't be something better. Or telling you that you're going to be a certain person or a certain profession or go down a certain career. Part of it's breaking through that mold, and so I think what you did was you sort of broke that mold, and it seemed to me it led you to be a much more successful, content person. Is that am I close? I mean, I'm trying to, you know,
totally. That's really how it happened. So. But I think a lot of people say begin the journey and the universe will conspire to assist you. And it did, but in quite a dramatic way. So when I was about, I'm just thinking, I was probably about 25. And I was married to a doctor already. I had all the sort of trappings that you might think of when you see somebody sort of success in the material world. I was a doctor myself, and I had just landed a job with my GP training. So that meant that I was guaranteed a career. That's what I thought it was. So at the age of 27, 28, I was going to reach the top of my profession. So I was headed to be a GP. My husband was a GP. We had a nice house in near London, in a nice area with a sports car. The rest of it, you know, his choice, not mine. And so we had, you know, the trappings of success on the outside, but you know, inside, and I'm someone who, you know, continuously writes, and I wrote a poem saying this just doesn't feel real. Yeah. You know, it's just, and my husband and I were getting very much, you know, in different directions, whereas I had trained to be a bioenergy therapist and started to have the most amazing multidimensional experiences. I was seeing clients in secret on, you know, unbeknown to my medical colleagues, I was seeing clients on the side. I didn't have a lot of time because I was working hard as a doctor, but you know, I used to fit them in, and I was having the most incredible experiences, really learning directly from the universe how it all works in the higher dimensions. And so I was going more and more down this route, getting interested in, I started to channel, actually, spontaneously started to channel, sort of information through, and very much firmly becoming what you might call a mystic. And my husband was definitely becoming entrenched in the material realm. In fact, he started to get interested in working for the pharmaceutical industry. So I was so busy about this that I didn't have time to really think about my marriage. And then it got to the end of my GP training. I did a few, I did a bit of locum work. And the locum job came to an end, and I was like, it feels like I'm meant to step off this 10-year rat race for a few moments and just reconnect to who I am. And when I did that, I realized that I think that my marriage was over, that we were not connecting anymore, and there was something, needed to shift. And at the same time, I started to I'd been writing notes on the book that eventually became Punk Science for a number of years, actually, and I still have those notes. It's amazing to see how similar the concepts are. They didn't change, from the mid 90s up to when the book was finally published in 2006. The wording of that is very, very similar. So I was starting to look and think, I really want to write this book. And so I sent off to a few publishers. And I think when you start to step on your path and really start to take that leap, things do just orchestrate around you. So here I was, a full sort of blown mystic, and my husband and I made the split. And my ex-husband actually went to my parents, who are both doctors, and said that the split was because I was unstable in my mental health, and started to relate some of the things that I had said to him over the years about my sort of multidimensional experiences. Right. So bear in mind, at this point, I had been channeling angels, I had been having visions. And this, to my parents, who knew nothing of my life like this, just sounded like Bandor's psychosis. And so they put two and together, thinking, here she is leaving her husband, acting as a character, and then he's telling us that she's having all these experiences. It must be a psychosis. And all of this led to them going to my own personal doctor, who I had actually trained with. So that was a strange thing.
Right.
They had known me as a colleague. And then suddenly my parents are coming and saying she's unstable. And they were like, okay, so they'd see me every day for, when you're leading a double life like I did, and, in order to become in integrity, sometimes these things have to happen.
Yeah.
And so it all came out into the open. And so my doctor, my parents kept insisting I needed a check for my mental health. I had one, and then my father said again that I don't think she's, quite right. They at the end of the day, my parents are from India, so there is, even though they're quite forward-thinking, there was still a bit of the old-fashioned women should behave in a certain way that still goes on with them.
Right.
And for a woman to leave her marriage is still quite challenging, even though I chose my own husband. it's still quite challenging, And they were thinking about the community, saving face, all of that
right.
sort of thing. And genuinely concerned because, the way my ex-husband was putting things was that it sounded like psychosis to them. They didn't have any other explanation.
But what happened here to you is that this is the transition you made, right? This was the transition from your old life to your new life, and you had to go through, in the real world, you had to go through all these trying experiences. And I think that what you said here, that I want to just probe a little bit, this issue of channeling. And can you just, because we have had a channeler on the show on the show a couple months ago, and I just like you to explain what that means to you, and also when someone says, "Oh, well, that's just make believe," what's your response to that?
You know, I even look at my own channeling and visions in a scientific way. But I'll tell you how it started. I mean, I was in a meditation group, and I started to get the sense of words that were not really coming from me. And, you know, some alarm bells might be, you know, sort of going for people who know anything about psychosis. But I think the difference between, and I've spoken to the head of the sort of Royal College of Psychiatrists spiritual division about this, the difference between a psychosis and someone who's channeling is that it doesn't pose a problem. When somebody's mentally well, they haven't lost touch of reality. So I was getting a sense of this sort of lifting up of during this meditation group, and these words coming. And so I just sort of started to speak these words, and the different things came for different people in the group. And I was like, okay. And I could see by this time, if you remember, I had a Kundalini experience when I was 18, which made me mystical. So I could see this man in the room, not physical man, but in spirit. And he was with a lamb, like a little lamb. Don't know who he is. Still to this day, don't know who he is. But he was just in the middle of this meditation circle. And without me saying anything to my friend, she leaned over and she said, there's a man with a lamb here. And so I was like, okay, she's seeing it too. So ever since, and I came out of the meditation meeting and my clock was 25 minutes behind everybody else's.
That's weird.
It was really weird. I don't know what happened, but ever since then I've been able to channel in that way. And it's not something that's publicly known, because I don't find it... it's not always helpful.
Yeah.
And people would say that that's an interesting thing, but every single person who channels is interpreting things through their own emotions.
Yes.
So you're only getting...
Yeah, well, I guess I want to... You know, the point I want to make here is that channeling is probably something like a lot of mystical experiences, which is that you would probably keep your eyebrows raised until you have one yourself. And then when we think, and when we consider that the foundation of many religions is based upon people who channeled, I mean, I think my best example that I use is Muhammad, who channeled the Quran to found Islam. Okay, that's, you know, God came to him and told him to speak, and the Quran came out. That is the story of Islam. And similar situation occurs with the Bible, with many parts of the Old Testament, where those are supposed to be the words of God, not the words of the peasants who drafted the terms, and it's something maybe we don't talk about that much. And I really like your approach to it, because we're not, you know. We're not saying, and I don't think you're saying, that the fact that you channel therefore means that you're right, or therefore this is the foundation of your system. It's something that is consistent with the new paradigm, which is that if there is a unity of consciousness, then it would seem as if, whether it's dreams, whether it's meditation, whether it's some other type of deep thinking or deep rest standpoint, you might be able to tap into this united consciousness, then that it's consistent. But to me, from what you're saying, it's a feature. It's sort of like the less important feature of who you are. Is that right?
For me, yeah, you're absolutely right, and it is consistent with this, with the science that you're able to tap in to. If the universe is a hologram, as we've discussed last time, all information is accessible in all parts. So, you know, if your brain is a conduit, it could actually take in information from other parts of the from other realms of the universe, and I think that's what channeling is. But I think I would really caution people who, there's a glamour about it, and I even mean it in the old-fashioned sense of glamour, you know, the way that the Celts used it, you know. So it's like, you know, it becomes something that people give their power away to. And I see that a lot in sort of New Age circles. Well, it's channeled, therefore it must be true, and it must be, you know, something that we need to follow and listen to. And I think that's really dangerous as well. And I'm very aware that it just didn't feel right all these years. I mean, I'm capable of mediumship, psychic abilities, healing, channeling, and all the things that people do. But for me, that's less interesting than looking at the overarching paradigm of science and how it can perhaps explain some of these things and, you know, how we're moving forward. And, as you know, it's just something that I started to do. I never looked for it. I never look for it. Sometimes even now I'll be minding my own business. I was in a supermarket the other day with my mother. And so I started to, you know, I go on and tell the rest of the story, but we're great. We're all very, you know, loving with each other, my parents and I still. And, you know, so I was in the supermarket with my mother, and I had a vision so strongly that I actually had to sit on the floor, you know, did my whole physical strength went. And so my mother witnessed this happening in the supermarket line, which was quite interesting. So I don't look for it. It happens to me. And, you know, a lot of people are sort of maybe, you know, can be get a bit jealous of that, you know. But for me, there's no attachment. I'm not, you know, everything in the universe below the speed of light we were talking about last time has charge and time and space. And what you're looking to do to get, you know, well, not looking to do, but if you're getting something through that you're not looking for, it has less attachment, less time and space, less charge. And so it has less polarity. And so, you know, what's coming through me, I just allow to come through. I know that I'm, you know, totally protected. And, you know, it just comes through. And sometimes it's interesting, sometimes it's not.
Yeah, I tell you, one of the, I don't know if the show's in the UK, I would think it's not. But I tell you, one of the most popular shows right now on TV here, I think it's called Long Island Medium, where a normal woman raised, I think she's still Catholic, in New York, is a medium. And the whole show is basically her trying to show that she's not making it up, that she's so believable that, and this is what makes it a very popular show, because with our modern mindset, with this Newtonian worldview, we tend to look down or think on people that claim that they're mystics, mediums, or channelers or whatever, because it doesn't fit the mold. And to me, the most important thing here is that we come to a decision point with things like mysticism, channeling, mediumship, life after death, paranormal, this whole category of odd stuff. We come to a decision point. Either you reject it out of hand without even thinking about it because it doesn't fit the Newtonian model, or you look at the best examples of it, such as Charles Tart, Dean Radin, and many other researchers in the paranormal, and you say, well, let's see if we could come up with a new paradigm that could explain, that could bring in these paranormal events. And that's what's going on right now, I think, with this evolution. I don't know if it's a revolution or evolution, but it's at least an evolution in paradigms where science, what we call science, what we call a worldview, is changing slowly to incorporate some of these oddities of experience. There will still be fake channelers. There will still be fake mystics, just like there's whether it's athletes, whether it's writers, or whether it's lawyers or doctors. There's all sorts of people in professions that fake it. But it doesn't mean that everyone's a fake. And so that to me is the big decision, is the big point. And with shows like this Long Island Medium, with the popularity, at least in this country, of all sorts of shows, The Illusionist and Touch and The Mentalist, where things are being pushed to the fringes. And I think one of the shows is called The Fringe. Where I think there's a curiosity we all have into, hey, is this stuff real? And I think what I'm saying, I don't want to speak for you, Manjir, but what I'm saying is, yes, there is a basis to think this is real. And I assume that that's sort of where you would go.
I experienced it myself.
It's pretty hard. It's pretty hard to rule it out if you experience it yourself.
Exactly. And as I said, I'm not trained. I wasn't looking for it. It started to happen. And as you mentioned earlier, I really do think a lot of the science that has been done through all the scientific breakthroughs that have done throughout the ages has had an element of mysticism, as in channel. I mean, at the end of the day, let's take away the words. What we're talking about is somebody in union with their universe. Right. And I love that Michael Faraday, when he really made those breakthroughs in electromagnetism, he actually saw like the lines curving. So everybody was looking for straight lines in the electromagnetism force, you know, and he actually could see the curves. Therefore, he could do the experiments. His mind became at one with the universe, and that's where he got the breakthrough, where nobody else could see it. And I do think if you look behind a lot of the scientific breakthroughs, effectively that's what it is. You know, call it channeling, call it mysticism, call it whatever, inspiration, genius. This is the moment where we're in tune with the universe. And, it's amazing. And in terms of what you're... I just wanted to say this, a very funny letter that I got from someone who said, oh, I love your book, Punk Science. It's great. It's got lots of, new science in. But I must tell you, psychics don't really exist.
That was good for them to figure that one out. Yeah, that was good for them to tell you that.
Must let you know, psychics don't really exist. Okay. They're just charlatans looking for money. And I think the fact that I am psychic, I could, if I wanted to, go and do a mediumship, platform mediumship, the rest of it. I never have done. I've never made a penny from any of this. The idea that that all of them are charlatans just looking to get money is, if you're sitting there with all the abilities and you're not making a penny from them because you just, choose not to, right. It kind of counteracts the argument, doesn't it? So I thought that was really, really sweet.
You put your finger, I thought that was really well said, in that we tend to approve of, accept inspiration, the eureka moments, the epiphanies, from scientists and inventors and poets and musicians. But when we have somebody say, well, I spoke with the dead, or I channeled, or I channeled something from the cosmos, all of a sudden these people are sort of like outliers. And I think you're exactly right, is the terminology, because if we use the word inspiration, or it came to me in a dream, that's pretty good. I think most people would say, well, you sleep on it, came to me in a dream. All sorts of things come to people in dreams, and for some reason that's more acceptable than saying it in a different way. But I think the fact that you aren't promoting yourself as a channeler, a mystic, does say a lot, and I think that those who are listening have to understand that this whole thing is not going to go anywhere. And by this whole thing, I mean this new paradigm. It's not going to go anywhere unless it's scientifically valid, right? I mean, we could pound the table. We could talk about angels and channeling and mystics and soaring through the air, all sorts of things. But if it's not proven scientifically, if there isn't a theory and if there isn't experiments proving it, then it's not going to go anywhere. I mean, so that to me is the end of the story. I mean, to me, that's it. Because we have, and we can go on and on and talk about all sorts of modern theories that don't have any scientific support either, but are considered to be legitimate because they're sort of materialistic oriented. But before we end, why don't you, in summary fashion, sort of just give some maybe words of wisdom for those who want to find their own groove, their own genius groove. I mean, you call it the genius groove, which I think is a cool way to put it, by the way. I like your sort of emphasis on music and pop culture. What tips would you have for somebody that wants to find their genius groove?
Well, I think I have to say that I've lived it, and I think when we just started talking about my story, I did go through a dark night of the soul, which may happen, you know, as you crack open your old life, you know, depending on how entrenched you are in that, you know, you may go through some dark times as you follow the call of your heart. But understand that we talked last time about the fact that your higher self that's beyond the speed of light. That's really where you've made the decisions of what you come to do, you know, what your purpose is, and you're in continuous dynamic with that part of you that's beyond the speed of light. We talked last time about the black hole principle and how, you know, we're continuously creating from beyond the speed of light into what we call the physical realms. And what we call the physical may not see the big picture, but, you know, if you are going through the hard times like I went through, understand that it is your higher self. And by understanding that in the moment that I was going through that, by the way, I eventually quit the medical profession. I wasn't struck off or anything. I knew that I was being asked to step into a greater reality. You get into what I call new paradigm living, where you're moving into your genius groove, you're flowing with what you're meant to be, you're not in your ego self trying to manifest really tightly through the law of attraction, I want this, I want... You're accepting what your higher self, which is you, you know, has created already for your world. And when you move into that acceptance that you are the greatest great oneness and you have created everything already for you. And there may be things that are uncomfortable, like I had to go through, but you've created those for a reason. And you may have given yourself loving lessons, actually, and how to come back to wholeness, how to bring the positron and electron back through to light. And that's what the journey is. Just like the breathing black hole, you bring the shadow unconscious emotions, which you could call the antimatter self, and this could be reflected by the person at work who always irritates you. You know, she's showing you the subconscious emotions reflected back about yourself. There's something about her that is there to help you integrate. And instead of repressing that side of you, start to look at that mirror and to integrate that wholeness. And the more you do that, the more you're going along your breathing black hole journey. And that is bringing you further and further into light, out of space and time, and connecting you deeper into the universe. And that's connecting you deeper into your genius groove. So I really do feel that, you know, having this emotional awareness, not suppressing your emotions, but actually integrating them, starts to free yourself up. And there's actually a change in the whole being that, you know, is then able to move into this, you know. And I can tell you, since those times, my world is incredibly magical now. And I'm just so passionate for people to explore this too. There's a whole beautiful new paradigm of living that we're moving into, and it's connected, it's beautiful, it's magical. And I think, you know, moving into your genius groove and having a groovy life. Yeah. So this is about getting groovy.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. We have to keep, you know, we have to keep it, you know, fun and interesting at the same time, because this is not, I mean, we're not talking about drudgery here. We're talking about becoming a better, fuller, richer, a more satisfied, more happy person. That's what this is all about. And the beauty of this is that we know that one of the keys to success is not limiting yourself, is not doubting yourself, is thinking big. And what we're saying here is that science and the new paradigm is supporting that positive mindset, that way of thinking, and it's giving it, not only is it giving it credence, but it's showing the power that this genius groove, or that this tapping into the one consciousness really has for us. And so the beauty of this is that it's not like we have science over here in the big thick textbook, and then we have touchy-feely niceties over here on the shelf. What we're saying is that there is a convergence going on where the scientific paradigm is starting to support much of this big thinking, no holds bar, don't limit yourself kind of thinking. So at the end of the day, it looks as if that the interpretations of modern science are starting to show that the early Romans were right. There looks like there is a spirit of sorts guiding us. It's inside of us, waiting for us to tap it and to find our groove. And I'm going to just read one quote from Emerson on what he thought of geniuses. And he said, "To believe your own thought, to believe that what is true for you in your private heart is true for all men, that is genius." And so there is a genius inside all of us. I think that the two of us here on this show talking believe it, and it's just a matter of us having the courage to tap into it. Once again, Manjir, it's been a pleasure talking with you. And again, I'm going to, you have a couple websites, but the one that I think is your main website is paradigmrevolution.com, right?
Well, actually, they're all in one now. So okay. ParadigmRevolution.com, PunkScience.com, and TheGenius.com are all the same website. So nice. If you want to know about those two books and the new work in progress, you can find them all there.
Yes, well, and once again, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. It's always engaging talking with you. And I hope that everyone out there goes out there and finds their own genius group. This is Philip Mirton. This is Conversations Beyond Science and Religion. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Conversations Beyond Science and Religion with Philip Mirton. To find out more about Philip and his new book, The Heaven at the End of Science, visit heaven@theendofscience.com.